Hello and welcome to this podcast summary of the IASB board meeting held between the 25th and 27th of January 2012. My name is Mark Byatt, Director of Communications for the IFRS Foundation. I'm joined today by Alan Tashira, Senior Director of Technical Activities, Sue Lloyd, Senior Director of Technical Activities, and Steve Cooper, member of the IASB. Let's start then. Sue, perhaps you could introduce us to the discussion on classification and measurement of financial instruments.
Okay, sure. At last month's meeting, the two boards had their first joint discussion on their classification and measurement models for financial instrument accounting. Late last year, the IASB had already agreed to consider making limited modifications to IFRS 9, and one of the main reasons for doing that was to try to see if there were ways to bring the IASB's and the FASB's classification and measurement models closer together. At the meeting last week, the two boards agreed that they would work together to try to reduce the differences between their two classification and measurement models. In particular, they agreed to focus on a few main topics. What contractual cash flow characteristics an instrument should have to be eligible for amortized cost measurement, the need for bifurcation of financial assets, and whether or not it would be appropriate for the IASB to introduce a third category for the measurement of debt instruments through OCI. The boards have decided that they will discuss each of these main issues jointly and then consider separately whether they'll make changes to IFRS 9 for the IASB and to the FASB's near-finalised classification and measurement model, with a view to then separately issuing exposure drafts.
Okay. Steve, perhaps you could go on to talk a little bit about the discussion on impairment.
Yeah, we had quite a long session on impairment, and this was to discuss purchased financial assets. Not all of them, but most purchased financial assets would be put into bucket one and dealt with in the same way as originated assets, transferred to buckets two or three as appropriate. But certain purchased assets do create difficulties, and these are those that have an explicit expectation of credit losses at acquisition. And these, rather than being put into bucket one and then transferred, we decided that we would have a different approach, which actually is essentially the same or very similar to what we currently have in IAS 39 and US GAAP, where this special rule already exists. The idea is that these assets would be put directly into buckets two or three, but that we would have a different approach to the calculation in respect of these assets. In particular, that we would accrete the assets from purchase price to expected cash flows and not recognize a day one loss. If there are subsequent deterioration, then we would recognize the effect of that deterioration. Subsequent improvement would also be recognized as a gain. That's essentially the same as IAS 39. The improvement aspect of it would be a slight change in respect of US GAAP. So in respect of IFRS, not a massive change compared with IAS 39 for this particular class of assets. What we then went on to discuss was the scope, which assets that would apply to. The IASB board members favoured keeping the scope similar to what we have in IAS 39. The FASB, however, wanted to explore a slightly wider scope for this, and they directed their staff to go away and have a look at some of those ideas. So we haven't really come to a final decision about the scope. We'll have to return to that in a subsequent meeting. And the third aspect of this was presentation. There's always been some issues to do with presentation for these particular types of assets, because you end up with assets which have an expectation of losses, but where on day one there is no allowance, explicit allowance for those losses. That's because the assets would be booked at fair value on their purchase, which obviously the fair value could be lower than the par value of these loans. So we looked at different ways in which presentation could be modified, perhaps to try and accommodate some of the concerns that users have in this area. The boards didn't recommend going with a grossed up form of presentation in the balance sheet, which was discussed in the board papers. Instead, we decided that we would essentially continue with the presentation that we have at the moment under IAS 39 for these types of assets, but that we would try and enhance the disclosures for these to make it easier for analysts to make comparisons between originated and purchased loans, which is the difficulty that they have at the moment. So that's essentially it on impairment.
Okay. Sticking with financial instruments, Sue, I think there was a discussion on macro hedging. Of course, the ISB's already issued an exposure draft on the standard hedging model. So was this the first discussion on macro hedging at the board?
No, this was a continuation of the ISB-only discussions on macro hedge accounting. For some time now, the board has been initially being educated on the sort of risk management that's the underlying sort of economic phenomenon that we're trying to account for, and has now moved on to possible ways of thinking about how to account for that. And this was another non-decision-making meeting in that series of discussions, if you like. And at this session, the board discussed possible approaches for the interest rate risk accounting for closed portfolios of debt instruments. The board was asked to look at how IAS 39 today would be applied to that area, and to compare that with the net portfolio valuation approach and with bottom layer approaches. They also then went on to look at the more complicated scenarios involving open portfolios, and to look at what the further implications were where the portfolios of assets aren't homogenous. It's a very complicated area, but the good news was that the board's had a good discussion on it and were receptive to the ideas that the staff was presenting, and will continue the discussions of the next steps in the development of this potential macro hedge accounting model at the February meeting.
Okay. Steve, perhaps we could move on to insurance contracts and discussions at the board.
We had an education session on insurance, so no decisions were taken at this meeting. And it was to do with the premium allocation approach and three things: the eligibility criteria for when to apply the premium allocation approach, whether discounting and interest accretion should be required, so it's the application of time value of money, and then the treatment of acquisition costs within this particular approach. So we had a good discussion on all of these issues. As I say, decisions will be taken in respect of this at a subsequent meeting. We did ask the staff to go away and think about a possible sort of slight modification to what was in the papers, and that is that to consider looking at a principle for applying the premium allocation approach, which is that it would be permitted or required, we haven't yet finalized that aspect of it, when the results of applying the premium allocation approach would be similar to those produced by using the building block approach. But on top of that, give a practical expedient that where coverage is approximately 12 months or less, then you automatically are able to use the premium allocation approach. In terms of when results would be similar, then we've suggested that staff look to providing application guidance as to those circumstances where a similar outcome would be expected. So this is sort of consistent with what we had in the paper, but it was a slight variation, I guess, that we discussed at the meeting. So we asked staff to go away and have a think about those things, and then we'll come back and make some final decisions in this area in the near future.
Obviously, those are projects that are occupying a lot of the board time at the moment. The ISB has been consulting for the last 6 months or so on its future agenda. Alan, I believe that was discussed at the conclusions of that consultation exercise during the board meeting.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. You're right, this is our first triennial review, and what we've been doing is asking people for feedback on the strategic direction the board should take with setting its agenda. So this is a chance for the board to have a look at the formal feedback it received through the comment letters. Slightly unusual one in this case too. We did a lot of extra work with investors, and I think if we look at the number of letters we got from investors as a percentage of total letters overall, it was certainly the highest we've had for I think for any consultation, and that's through particular efforts from the staff and board members to go out and actually talk to investors. They undertook, we had an online survey, and we had quite a few interviews with investors as well. The general feedback is, by the way, I've got 245 comment letters back on this. The general feedback is pretty consistent, actually, in that I think people are saying that the framework's very important and we should re-energise our efforts there. Post-implementation reviews, we should make sure that we are doing those and encouraged us to do so. And a lot of work, I guess, on implementation, which is your day-to-day maintenance and looking after the current standards. That's the interpretations committee process, annual improvements and so on. There was support for that. Plus, of course, feedback on possible projects at the standards level, and we have 20 to 30 projects were identified in there, and so we've got some initial sense of what people think might be a priority. There wasn't a decision-making meeting. This is really to summarise the feedback we've got, and it's still a little bit more to do because we've had one round table in Singapore. We've got round tables coming up in London, North America, and some additional outreach activities in South America. So we've got we're going to seek a little bit more feedback on, particularly on the standard level side. And what the board's asked us to do is prepare a development plan that will be presented back to the board in March. So we're making good progress there. It's also going to be discussed at the next advisory council meeting next month.
Okay, that's the one on the 20th and 21st of February?
That's right, it's here in London.
This month, in fact.
Right. Thank you, Sue.
Okay. let's move on to the discussion on effective dates. Alan, can we stay with you?
Sure. We received a request from the European Financial Reporting Advisory Group, or EFRAG, to delay a package of reforms that we have in place that relate to consolidated financial statements, joint arrangements, and disclosures about the relationships that a reporting entity has with particular types of other entities. This is really a response to the G20 and the Financial Stability Board in relation to the financial crisis. So this is a package of reforms we think is necessary. EFRAG asked us to consider the application date. They're due to take effect from 1 January next year, and they asked for a deferral. The board had a look at that. They looked at some of the concerns raised by some of EFRAG's constituents in Europe. But the board also noted that we received some information from other entities. They put a lot of effort into preparing for this and are ready to go from 1 January next year. Plus, a lot of other jurisdictions have already put the reforms into legislation and are ready to go from 1 January next year. So the board looked at that and really gave particular weight to the fact that the whole package is a response to the financial crisis, and so was very reluctant to delay this and was unanimous in saying that we should go ahead with, as planned.
Okay, thank you. So what else coming up? We've got the Advisory Council on the 20th and 21st. The next board meeting?
It's the week after that, so it's quite late in the month. I think the week beginning the 27th of February, so that's the next time the board will meet here in London.
Right, okay. Good. All right. Well, that just leaves me to thank Sue, Steve and Alan, and to give the obligatory health warning that these are the personal views of the presenters and do not necessarily represent those of the IASB. The only official summary of the board meeting is provided by IASB Update, which will be available on the IASB website shortly. Thank you.
Thank you.